Good morning, everyone. And for the record, my name is Norma Camacho, and I'm the chair of the LA Regional Water Board. And today is Thursday, March 27th, and the time is 9:02 a.m. So I'm officially calling this meeting to order. So for people who only want to listen to or watch the meeting, the board's customary website is available, or webcast is available, and there is a direct link to the webcast on the meeting agenda posted on our website. In addition, we are receiving presentations and public comment through a Zoom meeting platform and in person. For people who want to listen or watch the meeting in Spanish, we do have Spanish interpretation services available through the Zoom platform, and instructions are shown on the slide, but if I could ask Mr. Renteria to come forward and to provide an explanation how to participate in Spanish. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Camacho. Appreciate it. Muy buenos días a todos ustedes. Estaremos proporcionando servicios de interpretación el día de hoy en español. En su pantalla, la brevedad, verán en la parte inferior de su pantalla un icono en forma de un globo. Presione ese icono y verá la elección de español. Una vez que lo haga, elija nuevamente y presionarlo para que pueda poner el silencio en audio en silencio. Una vez que lo haga, estará escuchando la interpretación en vivo. Si está presente aquí en la sala, a favor de acercarse con nosotros en la parte de atrás y con gusto lo apoyaremos. Si tiene un problema técnico, a favor de alzar su mano y con gusto lo apoyaremos. Back to you, Chair. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. And so also please note that for all LA Regional Water Quality Control Board meetings, there is no expectation of privacy regarding any communications. And meetings are recorded and names of participants are listed in the Zoom form. Participation in a recorded meeting will be deemed consent to be recorded. And so we'll start with item number one, which is roll call. So Ms. Rowe.
Yes, good morning. Board Member Ashion.
Present.
Chair Camacho.
Present.
Board Member Christensen. Board Member Mendez.
Present.
Vice Chair Nahai.
Yes.
A roll call complete. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we'll go to item number two, which is the order of the agenda. And so I'll turn to Ms. Arredondo to see if we have any changes.
Hi, Chair. I do recommend moving item number seven before item six. So EO's officer report comes after Board Member Laurel Firestone's update.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. So with that, we'll move to item number three, is approval of draft meeting minutes for December 21st, 2024. And do we have any?
I'll move it.
Okay, we have a move from the vice chair and the second.
I'll second.
Okay, second from Board Member Ashion. So if we could have a roll call vote.
Board Member Ashion.
Yes.
Chair Camacho.
Yes.
Board Member Mendez.
Yes.
Vice Chair Nahai.
Yes.
Roll call. Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And so we're going to item number four, which is selection of board officers for calendar year 2025. And so I know that we were supposed to do this in the February meeting, but we had to cancel that meeting due to all the fires. And so I would like to start off the process first by announcing that I will be stepping down as chair of the regional board. And so my nomination is going to go to the vice chair, David Nahai. And I just want to make sure that he accepts that challenge.
He'll accept the privilege.
The privilege, okay. Okay, thank you very much. Any other nominations?
I would like to nominate for vice chair Member Ashion.
Okay, Member Ashion.
If she's willing to take on that responsibility.
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, great. And so I believe that we'll have to, if there are no other nominations, then we'll have to first do the chair and vote on that, then the vice chair. And so.
Board Member Ashion.
Oh, this is for the chair. Correct.
The chair, mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
Chair Camacho?
Yes.
Board Member Mendez?
Yes.
And Vice Chair Nahai?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. And then we will now go to Vice Chair.
Board Member Camacho?
Yes.
Board Member Mendez?
Yes.
Vice Chair Ashion.
Yes.
And Chair Nahai.
Yes.
I think I did that correctly.
Well done, Heather.
Yes. So congratulations to everybody. And we move forward. And I just want to say a few words in regards to now Chair Nahai, that I really think with the fires and his deep commitment to this community and the relationships he's developed over the years with the business community as well with the water community, I think those relationships are necessary at this time, and I think it's going to be really going to assist the whole community in moving forward and expediting the rebuilding process. And so those are my comments.
Thank you. And if I may, I just wanted to say a few words about your tenure as chair. And I've told you this a number of times. I think you've been an exemplary chair. You've been temperate. You've been so clear-eyed in your leadership of the board in the face of some trying situations as well. I've watched you function, and it's been a pleasure to work with you and to see your brand of leadership of the board, and I'm just very happy that we'll continue to work together, and I hope that you will continue to play the role that you have been playing at the Regional Oversight Committee of the Safe Clean Water Program, which is so important for the work that we do here. So I want to commend you on what you've done and encourage you to continue the work that we will be doing here together. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, and absolutely. And so as we continue this meeting, maybe we should change spots so that we have everything set up. Maybe just take a couple minutes to
sure.
do that.
Mm-hmm. Can I say a few words?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's true.
First, I also like to thank the chair for the steadfast leadership that you did the last couple of years, particularly in difficult, turbulent times in terms of change up of the board membership itself, also our executive leadership, our executive officer. Quite proud to work with you on those issues, and most importantly, your steadfast analysis and steady hand of the issues, even if there was community concern, community unrest, or stakeholder unrest from government or industry, you were able to chart those choppy waters and bring us to some type of resolution or consensus, along with a fabulous vice chair that will take us to new uncharted waters, hopefully, as well. And I also want to wish the new chair and vice chair, the greatest support that as we move into these times. Particularly, I think it's important to have two lawyers serving in the leadership position, because we don't know what's coming down the road, either in terms of disasters or with the federal administration. So I think that it's a great opportunity. And I don't know if a lot of people understand that these positions are volunteer positions. And just to be a board member does take a lot of time. And it shows like the difficulty in selecting board members, getting them nominated to pass through the confirmation process takes a very long time. As you can see, we haven't had appointments of two missing other board members. So I thank you for that time and, the extra amount of work that you will be doing as chair and vice chair. So thank you for that privilege to serve under your leadership.
Sabrina.
I just want to say a huge thank you, Chair Camacho, for the warm welcome when I arrived at the board, and just watching your leadership and your leadership style over the past 2 years has been really incredible to see. You run efficient and effective meetings, but also ensure that everyone in the community is heard, that all of the different stakeholders are heard and really feel valued from being here, and just the way that you led us through the process of the executive officer hire and a lot of transition that we've had. It's just been such a joy and a pleasure to work with you and to learn from you, and I look forward to us staying on the board and working together, but it has really been such a highlight, so thank you very much.
Thank you all, and it's been a pleasure, and so, but I will continue to stay on the board as long as I can, and also continue my work with the ROC as well, too, so I would be glad to do that. So it is time for us to change chairs, and thank you for the new chairs, too.
A new way of looking. All right. Okay. Well, we'll get started. So, first of all, to my fellow board members, thank you very much for the vote and for entrusting me with this position. I think this will be my fifth time being chair of the regional board. I don't know what that says, and I so look forward, Sabrina, to continuing our partnership. Board Member Ashton and I serve on the litigation subcommittee together, and so we've worked very, very closely, and I'm very happy that we'll be having this new partnership. And I just want to say this. Board Member Mendez referred to turbulent times, and indeed we have had them, and we're going through even more turbulent times right now with the fires and all of the other challenges that we're facing. Having for us to figure out what exactly we're going to do in the aftermath of the fires and how to help communities build back in a way that's sustainable and environmentally responsible and affordable and rapid and all of the challenges that involves. And at the same time, we're seeing ever more efforts to erode environmental protections in our region. And this is something with orders coming down from the Supreme Court, something that we have to understand, digest, and perhaps adapt to. I just want to say to all of the women and men who work at the regional board, you know, it's easy to feel dispirited in these times. I was listening to the news just driving here, and I wanted to go back home and put the sheets over my head, you know, but we cannot be disheartened. The work that you do at the regional board is truly noble work. It matters. It matters. And so even with all of the negativity that you may be hearing around you, budget woes, fires, natural, unnatural disasters, please take heart and continue doing your work. So. All right, with that, we will go on to the next item, which are board member communications. And I'll first ask board members if there are any ex-party communications that they would need to disclose. Board Member Mendez?
None.
Vice Chair Ashton?
None.
Chair Emeritus? Is that how we refer to you now?
No, just board member is fine.
Okay.
None.
All right, and I have none to report. Okay, next we'll go on to any board member reports that board members may wish to share. Board Member Mendez?
The only one, it's not necessarily related to the work of the Regional Water Board, but it may be of interest. I did pass it along to our executive leadership, our EO, and deputy EO. I launched with other scholars at the University of Colorado, an indigenous scholar, as well as another urban planner at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. We did an assessment of tribal engagement with urban planners and other government officials around land use and environmental projects. So I'll make that available for everyone that's interested in it, but it was some interesting findings, at least from government officials at the local level that are showing success stories, but also a lot of gaps and challenges in doing meaningful consultation with tribal leaders and groups and nations throughout the state. But interestingly enough, the state, with all its constraints and, you know, challenges itself, is leading the path forward in some of that tribal engagement. But we're now entering the next phase to do a 360 review of that and engaging with tribal nations directly to get their assessment and perspectives of what planners and other local government officials have said about the two state laws that require this tribal engagement. So obviously more work is going to be needed from the Native American communities and tribes as well. Thank you.
Board Member Camacho.
Yes, a few things to report out on. And I attended both the February and March Regional Oversight Committee for Safe Clean Water. And I know at the February meeting with the fires and all that had occurred, and we were didn't have monitoring data just yet, we had delayed the meeting with the water quality work group to see if there was going to be any data or anything that would suggest a different direction for our development of the draft revised alternative approach for developing water quality targets for the program. And so we continued our work as a work group on March 24th. And I think we're really close to getting a draft together, and we plan to bring the draft to the full Regional Oversight Committee on April or May for comment and review. And basically what we're targeting is to hopefully have these recommendations included in the biennial report that goes to the Board of Supervisors, and the target date is about December of this year. And so, but I just want to give a really big shout out to Jenny Newman, who really, even in the midst of the fire and all the emergency response, was able to carve out some time to still move forward and put together the draft for review. And I think we're very, very close to getting consensus. And so thank you very much for making that effort, Ms. Newman.
Board Member Ashton.
Yes, I also want to echo the sentiments of Chair Nahai to thank all of the board, all of the board staff for all of your work during the devastating fires. I know that you have all been working really tirelessly, and we are so grateful for that work of and the collaboration that you've done with other agencies throughout Los Angeles for this just unprecedented and devastating fires that we've witnessed, and also all of the lessons that have been learned and ways that we can prepare and help for, you know, should these disasters happen again, and any ways that the board can assist in your work. We want to be here to do that. And then I just have two quick other items to mention is the Environmental Law Institute, which is like a think tank based in D.C., is doing a West Coast boot camp for those who want to learn more about environmental law, various environmental law issues. That's happening at the end of April. So if you are interested in attending, please reach out to me. I'm teaching a session on environmental justice, but there's lots of sessions, and you can kind of come and go if you're interested, perhaps in the water law session or others. Please reach out to me. And then I also want want to mention that Assistant Executive Officer Jenny Newman and I both sit on the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission, and we just selected new leadership for the next 2 years, and our next meeting for that is April 17th, if anyone is interested in attending. That's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you. And I have just one report to give. On April 25th, the Los Angeles Business Council will hold its annual mayoral housing summit. It'll be at UCLA. And the focus of the summit this year will, of course, be our ongoing housing and homelessness crisis and what can be done to alleviate the pain and suffering that that this crisis continues to afflict us with, especially given the fires and the devastating impacts that they've had as well. So, I think I'll open the conference in the morning and provide closing remarks at the end of the day. I think it's well worth attending. LABC is a progressive business organization which really strives to find solutions to our societal ills. So. For those of you who are interested, on the LABC website, it'll be on, as I said, April 25th. Okay, we'll move on now to a really happy part of our program today, staff recognitions. So would you like to introduce the people who are going to be recognized today?
Sure, I can do that. I'll call up Rosie Villar, our administrative officer, who will present an award to Andrea Schmidt. Oh, the mic. You gotta press it, I think.
Okay, well, again, if you didn't hear me, my name is Rosie Villar. I'm the administrative officer for the LA Regional Water Quality Control Board. And today it is my pleasure to present Andrea Smith with a Sustained Superior Accomplishment Award. Region 4 has thousands of PRAs per year, arguably one of the highest in the water boards. Andrea works with both technical, legal, and support staff to ensure that that board meets legal deadlines and responds to each request as efficiently as possible. As part of her job, Andrea has to have incredible attention to detail and superior customer service skills. She is always finding ways to streamline our processes and consistently ensures that the Los Angeles Water Board fulfills this important public service. Andrea has been with the administrative section for a little over 3 years, and we recognize her great work ethic, and appreciate her very much. Andrea? Next, I'm going to call on Jung Hee, our Watershed Regulatory Supervisor. She will present to Adam Tang and Danielle Robinson.
Good morning, Chair Nahai and members of the board. My name is Jung Hee Lim, and I'm the section manager. I'm going to present only one person, and then I'm going to ask Stephen Wett, municipal permitting supervisor, to introduce her staff. Adam Tang has been working as a senior WRCE for the past 2.5 years in the watershed regulatory section. For these years, Adam, as a pretreatment coordinator, has completed 4 pretreatment compliance audits, which covered 13 major publicly owned treatment works, pretreatment program audits, and 2 pretreatment compliance inspections for POTWs. He also stepped into other sections' need on pretreatment program and provided a training and support in conducting a PCI and developing PCI inspection reports. Adam also has been working as a permit writer to develop recycled water permits for indirect potable reuse projects and has completed 2 recycled water permits for indirect potable water projects, such as Santa Monica Sustainable Water Infrastructure Project and Leo Vanderlands. One was adopted and another is pending board adoption this year. Adam has been involving numerous meetings related to the recycled water programs, supporting state board staff in development of new recycled water permit fees, providing dischargers for funding sources, and helping dischargers to receive funding from state revolving fund for their recycled water projects. He is also taking on new challenges, such as the development of evaluation and approval procedures for analytical method validation processes for flame retardant. Since the appropriate analytical method for flame retardant under the 40 CFR Part 136 are not available, but some MPDES permits have flame retardant monitoring requirements, new method must be developed for compliance monitoring purpose. This process requires a coordination between qualified environmental laboratories and environmental laboratory accreditation program. His efforts on this method validation process will benefit to MPDES permittees that have a flame retardant monitoring requirement, environmental laboratories that are seeking accreditation for that method, and other permit writers that are looking for appropriate analytical method for flame retardants. He also recently served as a technical staff in the Joint Field Office supporting the LA County wildfire recovery efforts. Adam is a dedicated and hardworking staff, and his detail-oriented performance have been a great asset to the watershed regulatory section. I am so happy to present this award to Adam. And I'm also going to ask to Stephen Webb to here to introduce his staff.
Good morning. I'm Stephen Webb. I'm the supervisor of the Municipal Permitting Unit. My unit manages all the MPDES permits and recycled water permits for publicly owned treatment works. So, Danielle Robinson has shown exemplary performance in the Municipal Permitting Unit because she completed 3 major MPDES permits that were all adopted by the Los Angeles Water Board within 6 months of each other. 2 of these permits also required more advanced reasonable potential analyses due to the complex dilutions applied to these discharges. Developing a draft MPDES permit typically takes about 3 months, and it takes an additional 3 months to take the permit to the board for adoption. This individual's understanding of MPDES permits, or I guess Danielle's understanding of this MPDES permits, and her superb project management skills have allowed her to complete these 3 permits in under a year rather than 18 months to 2 years. In addition to completing these permits, Danielle continued to do an outstanding job completing her routine tasks, including reviewing monitoring reports, responding to discharger inquiries, and reviewing and making recommendations on complex studies related to a new ocean outfall. Danielle is also taking on new unique challenges, such as developing a single MPDES permit that covers an ocean discharge and an inland surface water discharge from a single facility. The development of this permit will save staff time in the long run because it will reduce the number of permits required to regulate these discharges. This individual is a dedicated, or Danielle is a dedicated member of the municipal permitting team, and her hard work and attention to detail have been a significant contribution to the Los Angeles Water Board. And with that, I'm proud to have this opportunity to award Danielle with her hard work. Danielle, please come up to receive your certificate.
Chair, now I'm going to present an award to the UST Coastal Unit, and I will make my way to the podium. Good morning, Board. Can you all hear me? Today, I would like to recognize the LA Water Board's Coastal Underground Storage Tank UST Unit for the 2024 Superior Accomplishment Award for their outstanding contributions to the UST program. The unit is led by Senior Engineering Geologist Wei-Jing Tong, who is also currently our Acting Supervisor for Underground Tanks. His unit consists of Dale Daly, Amanda Duvall, Martin Duna, David Jostad, and Erica Kono. They are a dedicated team known for their exceptional productivity, teamwork, and leadership. The unit manages the highest number of cases among the three UST units in our region and consistently produces the most regulatory actions, including directives, orders, permits, and site visits in meetings. They foster a culture of collaboration through weekly meetings that encourage knowledge sharing, case discussion, and technical problem solving, often influencing broader section discussions. Staff proactively support each other, assisting with case management, sharing templates, and covering workloads during staff absences. Their commitment extends beyond their unit. Staff members train new staff, participate in recruitment efforts, and support other UST units with case management. Over the past 4 years, the unit has consistently led other USTs in the region in productivity, handling over 365 regulatory actions annually and peaking at 402 actions in 2023-2024. Several members contribute to the UST program and oil and gas water quality monitoring program, balancing additional responsibilities such as aquifer exemption evaluations, underground injection control reviews, and spill inspections. Their teamwork-driven approach encourages a positive, healthy competition and ensures efficient case resolution and continuous program improvement. The Los Angeles Coastal UST unit exemplifies dedication, efficiency, and teamwork. It sustained high performance, willingness to go beyond its standard duties, and commitment to supporting colleagues make it genuinely deserving of this recognition. Congratulations to the team for their exceptional contributions to the LA Water Board. So if I could call them up. Wei Jing, Erica Kono, David Jostad, Martin Duna, Amanda Duval, and Dale Daly's not here today. Vice Chair, that concludes staff recognition. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So next item is update from our State Water Board liaison.
Hi. Can you hear me?
We can, but we cannot see you.
All right. I think, can you see me now?
Oh.
Only over your shoulder?
Yeah.
All right.
Yes, we
well,
can see you.
I'll get started if you can hear me.
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Great. So I wanted to also pile on my thanks and recognition to everyone that worked on fire response and continues to work on fire recovery. That includes our, certainly the regional board staff and also our Office of Emergency Management that we have, that actually was only recently created at the Water Boards, but I think has proved itself extremely needed. This continues to be something that folks are prioritizing. One of the things we've done in the last month is go over our draft or kind of working document of our strategic work plan, which sets forth our kind of highest priority areas of work at the Water Board, at the State Water Board. It's organized around protecting public health and access to safe and reliable drinking water and sanitation, and restoring watersheds, marine waters and ecosystems, increasing water resiliency in the face of climate change, strengthening our relationships and systems and internal capacity to accomplish our mission strategically, transparently, and equitably and efficiently across the Water Board's work. And one of the, within that, those highest priorities, we have starred items that are the very highest priorities. And one of those definitely is wildfire support and other emergency management, among many other things. One of the things we're also in the process of updating is the general order, statewide general order for utility wildfire maintenance work as well. I also wanted, and in addition to the strategic work plan, we also this past month gone over our racial equity work plan, and not just the action plan, and we do an annual review of progress made. And I just really encourage, it ended up being a very long session, I think particularly because those values have been really undermined at the federal level. And so this was an opportunity to really renew and reaffirm our commitment at the water boards to racial equity and really delve into the progress we've made and the work we have to come. And that's all available online to watch and look at the annual report. Let's see. I also wanted to recognize that there was, recent Supreme Court decision that impacts permitting, and our Office of Chief Counsel is working across the water boards to make sure we can adjust to our permitting to meet those changes and needs. And just to say, we do have, that involved the Federal Clean Water Act, and we do have our State Border Cologne Act, which provides a good backstop. But, there certainly are limitations or adjustments that need to be made as a result of that Supreme Court decision. I also wanted to mention that or encourage people to attend, ideally in person if you can, but otherwise there is a hybrid option. The WQCC, where we get together with all of the across the water board, state water board, and all of the regional boards. That will be May 1st and 2nd. It's all day May 1st and half day May 2nd. And I just really encourage folks, it's a really good chance to connect and talk about issues that I think are on all of our, that we're all working through. Let's see. In terms of what we're, and one more thing with the region I was going to mention is that I was able to attend a press conference in South El Monte with former Chair Camacho and our executive officer to recognize this project that the State Board invested millions of dollars into that is resulted in a really great example of a stormwater capture program that also serves so many multi-benefits in an underserved community, including shade to address urban heat island, traffic and road safety, access to healthy outdoor space and activities like bicycle riding, native plants, but I think importantly for us, really critical water quality and water supply benefits in terms of stormwater capture and control. So I just want to, it's always nice to see something in action. This regional board's efforts to help with permitting and regulatory oversight to help us develop multi-benefit projects while controlling and better utilizing stormwater and reducing impacts is key to making projects like this happen. So I wanted to recognize that. In terms of things, just to give you a sense of some of the major things that are taking our time and focus, at least especially over the past month at the State Board, we have our integrated report. We just had a workshop to get comments on the regions that are on schedule for that update to the 303D list and the California Integrated Report. We're doing a ton on the Bay Delta Water Quality Control Plan update, really trying to get that over the finish line to get that updated for the Sacramento River and Delta region. We are, our administrative hearing office is conducting hearings and moving through the process for the Sites Project Authority, the Delta Conveyance Project, and has recently started one on the Yuba County Water Agency's long-term transfer of water. We're very focused on SGMA. In February, we held a public hearing to consider probation for Kern County Subbasin, and we decided to continue the hearing until September to allow them to make some adjustments before we made a final determination of probation. And Department of Water Resources also reviewed and released its final determination on plan adequacy for 13 basins with groundwater sustainability plans that had been deemed incomplete. And of those 13, one was found to be inadequate and maybe subject to State Board intervention. We kicked off a urban stormwater infiltration policy proposal to set statewide standards for urban stormwater infiltration. So kicked off the CEQA process for that. Written comments are due at the end of this month on the scoping. We are continuing to move forward, of course, with our SAFER program. We held an advisory group meeting this month, and we'll be doing more in preparation of our draft fund expenditure plan coming out early summer. And then we are continuing to work on with stakeholder meetings on fee updates. So we hold meetings with stakeholders on fees for water quality and water rights and environmental laboratory program, drinking water. And so these are things that will continue as we have to, we do an annual process to update our fees, our discharger fees, and permittee fees. So the last thing I think I'd mention is there continues to be a huge focus on, of course, the water rights modernization and groundwater recharge. So there was a really good update and overview of our upward program and the new water rights systems that we are working through, beginning to pilot and roll out in an iterative way over time, and encourage folks to look back at our meeting if they're interested in that, because there was a really great overview of that work. I haven't given an update in person in a while, so I didn't cover everything, but that's sort of a give you a sense of the things going on that we're most focused on these days, and I'm happy to answer questions or also hear if there's things I can help report back on next time.
Well, thank you very, very much for yet another very comprehensive report, board member Firestone. I was going to say, I'm glad to hear that there's nothing going on up there. It's just incredible the amount of work that that you're doing. Thank you so much. So I'll ask for board member questions, comments. Board member Mendez.
Sure. Great. Good morning. Thank you, board member Firestone, for the great update. And I just had a couple follow-up questions. One, on the Office of Emergency Management, you said that this is the new office that you created at the board. Could you elaborate a little bit more about the functions that are this office is charged with, and have they been deployed for the greater Los Angeles recent fires?
Yes, definitely. You know, this was created, I can't remember off the top of my head the exact year, but it was with during the Newsom administration. And I think it really started in response to drought and the drought emergencies that were happening, as well as the wildfire emergencies that were happening really with great regularity. And the idea was there is a lot of very specialized processes and expertise needed for emergency management and response. And there needed to be a centralized place that housed that and could support the various regions and offices and divisions to liaison with the emergency management overall at the state and help support that. And I know they've definitely worked extensively on the LA fire response, as they have with other wildfire response since their creation, as well as drought and flooding, and I think earthquake and, you know, other emergency management. So I know at some point, just as, you know, as you hear from probably more updates on the wildfire response over time, you'll get more of a sense, but they've been critical, and I think worked really closely with the regional board staff that also was critical. And I think it's very helpful to have the expertise of folks that specialize in this particular circumstance.
Great, thank you. And I just had one more question. I have another wildfire question, but I'll leave that for the executive officer's report. But is there any update on the MS4 or urban runoffs permit for public schools?
That is on our list as a priority for releasing this year. What I would say is the phase two general permit, stormwater permit, is on our list to release this year. The draft that is the current draft actually doesn't include at least I think I want to say K through 12, and I can't remember the exact things off the top of my head, but doesn't include a number of schools. And that regulatory process to kind of refine that scope is one of the start items on our, or at least one of the primary items. I don't know if it's starred, but one of the items called out on our strategic work plan this year.
Okay. Well, I encourage you to. There's a lot of green schools coalitions that are working on climate resiliency on K through 12 public schools, particularly elementary schools. So I really encourage you to reach out to the parent leaders that have been working on that. That could be an added voice for making sure that the regulations are robust and address the community needs, particularly in the low income environmental justice communities that need this type of nature-based solutions and climate resiliencies. But thank you for your work.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thanks.
Board Member Camacho, any questions?
Yes, I do. I have a comment, actually. I just want to thank Board Member Firestone for, again, making the trip all the way to El Monte to the Merced Avenue Stormwater Capture Project. And I think what was, first of all, it was great to celebrate something and to accomplish something that is so fully backed by the community, and you could see that the community was totally energized for having this project in place, and it really is going to serve as a template to expand these types of stormwater capture projects throughout many of the communities, especially the underserved communities. And so there was a lot of joy, there was a lot of care out there, and there was a lot of pride. And so I'm glad you were able to come down to share that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Agreed.
Hi, Board Member Firestone. I just wanted to thank you for that thorough report and for all of the work that you're doing, and let you know I'm excited to see you for the upcoming WQCC. So thank you.
Excellent. Great. Excited to see you all.
And the same from me. Thank you very, very much, Board Members. See you at the WQCC. Thanks again.
Thanks.
All right. With that, we'll move to the Executive Officer's Report.
Yes, Chair. I have two updates for the Board. The first update is on the former United Technologies Corporation, UTC, Site 6633 Canoga Avenue, Canoga Park. In the Executive Officer's Report for the September and October Board meetings, we provided updates on the former United Technologies Corporation, UTC, site, also known as the former Rocketdyne site located in Canoga Park. As a brief background refresher, the site was used for the manufacture of rocket engines and related systems, which occupied an area of approximately 47 acres. Activities conducted on the site included metal molding, machining, cleaning and degreasing, plating, and engine assembly. No testing of rocket engines or related systems was conducted at the site. Soil vapor, and groundwater assessment and remediation of volatile organic compounds, VOCs, primarily tetrachloroethene, PCE, and trichloroethene, TCE, have taken place since 1984. As previously reported, recent off-site assessments indicate that VOCs such as PCE and TCE were detected in groundwater and soil vapor at some location which exceeded screening levels. Some of these exceedances are near residential and commercial properties, which would require further evaluation to determine if potential vapor intrusion risk exists. On October 10, 2024, the LA Water Board issued a letter to the discharger RTX Corporation, RTX, requesting the submittal of a work plan to further investigate specific off-site properties. Since that time, RTX submitted the work plan, which then was approved on February 13, 2025. RTX has been successful in obtaining access to multiple properties and began vapor intrusion testing in mid-March. We expect to have initial results submitted for a few properties as early as late May 2025. We have also been continuing our communications with the community by issuing a project update at the end of October 2024, as well as work notices in February of 2025, describing planned work activities taking place at specific locations. My second update is on the Southern California wildfires, impact response and recovery efforts. On January 7, 2025, Hurricane Force Santa Ana winds helped fuel devastating wildfires in Los Angeles County. The Palisades Fire burned 23,707 acres and destroyed 6,837 structures, while the Eaton Fire covered 14,021 acres and destroyed 9,418 structures. These fires rank among the most destructive in Los Angeles history, causing widespread environmental and infrastructure damage. In response, the Los Angeles Water Board, in collaboration with State Water Board, played a critical role in emergency operations. Our staff was embedded within the California Governor's Office of Emergency Services, CalOES, incident command structure, ensuring coordination between federal, state, and local agencies. Seven Water Board staff members, Adam Tang, Christopher Marquis, Andrew Villos, Emma Averill, Scott Landon, Laura Gregorian, and Michael Franco, worked tirelessly at the Joint Field Office, JFO, providing technical expertise and support on 12-hour shifts, 7 days a week. I sincerely thank our dedicated staff who work relentlessly at the JFO. Their commitment, expertise, and long hours were instrumental in our emergency response efforts. Their hard work directly contributed to the protection of water quality and supporting recovery. Thank you for your unwavering dedication and service. Additionally, I would like to acknowledge the invaluable contributions of State Water Board Emergency Management Program staff, Crystal Taylor, who played a critical role in coordination, technical analysis, and logistical support. To all other staff who contributed, whether named or unnamed, your efforts were essential in ensuring an effective and efficient response. This collective dedication highlights the strength and resilience of our team. Thank you all for your hard work and commitment to our mission. In the aftermath of the fires, the state and the regional water board staff worked closely with debris and watershed debris task force at the Cal OES FEMA Joint Field Office. Our staff have provided direction, consultation, and expertise to safeguard water quality and mitigate post-wildfire runoff impacts. Water board staff conducted site visits before rain events and continue to provide technical guidance on placing best management practices, BMPs, to minimize water quality impacts during rain events. The Los Angeles Water Board has implemented three key monitoring initiatives to support recovery further. The first two are beach water quality sampling and sediment sampling. Acting Regional Program Manager Emily Duncan will provide more details on these two efforts. The third initiative was to contract with Southern California Coastal Water Project, SCWRP, to coordinate all post-fire monitoring efforts of other state and local agencies, NGOs, and academic institutions. After Emily's presentation, SCWRP's Alvina Mahinto will present on its monitoring oversight project. So I'll hand it over to Emily. Thank you. And after they're done presenting, that will conclude my report.
Thank you.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah. So my name's Emily Duncan, and I'm acting as Regional Program Section Manager. Normally, I'm a senior ES specialist. Today, I'll provide a brief overview of the post-fire monitoring work that we began in January after the Palisade and Eaton fires. These unprecedented events required immediate attention because after wildfires, debris and ash containing pollutants can wash off into rivers and beaches and wash back on shore from the ocean. I want to start slides. Okay. I'll wait a second for the slides. There we go. Okay, so next slide. In this presentation, I'll provide an overview of our ocean water quality sampling, beach sediment, sand sampling, and I'll introduce Dr. Alvina Mahinto from SCWRP. Next slide. So post-fire water quality monitoring and ocean water quality sampling. The LA Water Board partnered with the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health to monitor ocean water quality before rain on January 22nd and after rain on January 27th, February 6th, and February 18th. And then the LA Water Board staff collected samples after the rain event that we had March 13th. We collected wave wash and storm drain samples at 12 beach sites indicated on this map. On February 6th, we collected four storm drain samples paired with beach wave wash locations. Samples were analyzed through the statewide chemistry contract, and the samples were analyzed for metals, nutrients, polychlorinated biphenyls, or PCBs, and polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, or PAHs, which are chemicals that may be found in water runoff based on previous California wildfires. Additionally, we analyzed for PFAS, asbestos, and VOCs, but only after the last two events. Next slide. So staff took these photos from the March 13th sampling event, so the next three slides will be some photos, and we got really lucky. It stopped raining right when we went out to start our sampling effort. And so the top two photos were taken at Will Rogers State Beach near the Santa Monica Canyon Rustic Creek storm drain, some examples of the debris after the rain. And the lower two photos were taken at our sampling location within Rustic Creek. Next slide. Next, we have some photos from Santa Monica Beach north of the pier. And then the lower two photos are from Santa Monica Beach, south of the pier. Next slide. And the last photos are from Venice City Beach at the top, and then the lower two images were taken from the pier in Venice. Next slide. So beach sediment sand monitoring. In addition to the water quality monitoring, the LA Water Board contracted with Moss Landing Marine Pollution Laboratories to collect the beach sediment samples. Samples were collected from 11 beaches and 4 storm drain or creek outfalls from Zuma Beach to Rat Beach. The samples were tested for metals, PCBs, and PAHs. The first sampling event took place from February 25th through the 27th, and we plan to have another set of samples collected prior to the Memorial Day holiday weekend. Next slide. So the next three slides are some additional photos of what it looked like when the Moss Landing field crew went out at the end of February. So we have a close-up shot of the sediment scoops and the jars from Zuma Beach. Next, we have Malibu Surfrider, and then Topanga Beach and Topanga Lagoon. Next slide. These photos are from the Rustic Creek outfall, and then we have two from the Montana Avenue storm drain at Santa Monica Beach. And then the last photo is from Santa Monica Beach, south of the pier. Next slide. And this is the last set of pictures from the sediment sampling. We have Venice Beach at the Rose Avenue storm drain, Mother's Beach, Dockweiler, and Rat Beach. Next slide. So I just wanted to highlight that we have created a new website dedicated to post-fire water monitoring. And so on our website, we have results from January 22nd, 27th, February 6th, and February 18th water quality sampling events. In addition, we have metals results from the sediment sampling conducted at the end of February. And we are currently working with, we're comparing the results with water quality thresholds and background levels, and we're working with the LA County Department of Public Health on how to interpret the results so the county can make public health decisions. So we'll update that periodically as we get, you know, new data. Next slide. So coordination of the multi-agency monitoring. As you can imagine, there's a lot of groups involved. So in the wake of the fires, staff immediately set up a contract with the Southern California Coastal Water Research Project, or SCWRP, thanks to funding from the Ocean Protection Council. This contract was put in place to coordinate monitoring of other government agencies, academic institutions, and nonprofits to ensure that appropriate methodologies are used and high-quality data are generated. The project will create and facilitate an interagency post-wildfire work group to ensure that adequate water quality monitoring is performed, identify key sites and indicators to be monitored, develop a set of recommended sampling and analytical methods, quality assurance and quality control measures, and data reporting requirements, and also coordinate sampling efforts to leverage our resources. So to provide more details about our efforts, I have Dr. Alvina Mahento from SCWRP. Thank you.
Good morning, board member. My name is Dr. Alvina Mahento. I'm the head of the toxicology department at the Southern California Coastal Water Research Project, and I'm an environmental scientist. Next slide, please. The next slide again. Thank you. So as Dr. Duncan mentioned, our role is primarily facilitation of all the different agencies that are currently monitoring after the wildfires. We're providing technical assistance to ensure that everything from field collection to data analysis to reporting is done appropriately so that all these individual efforts eventually, when coordinated, will provide a full picture. Next slide, please. So the first step of our project, our contract, has been to form a network of all the agencies that are involved, whether it's agencies that are currently sampling or also the agencies that will eventually use the data. To date, we have about 60 members representing 25 different agencies, more than half of those are actively working on the fires, as in the field sampling or testing. And as Dr. Denken mentioned, the agencies varied from state, local government, federal government, municipalities, NGOs, academic, and private labs. Next, please. And I should mention, well, this the map. We have this network currently has data for over 200 sites that are being sampled. This is a map of the data that we've collected so far. What I mean by data is coordinates, where things are being done and what type of data will come. The map, I'm not expecting you to see it. The main thing I wanted to point out is that we are covering both the Palisade and the Eaton Fire. And if you go on the next slide, please, you'll see that, thank you, that most of the effort that we've documented are along the coast and offshore, so in the Santa Monica Bay area. Next slide, please. So the group was formed about 2 months ago, and I just wanted to go over some of the accomplishments to date. The first one has been identifying the key data gaps. That was primarily what we wanted in what the regional board asked us to do, is understand who is doing what where, and where are areas that may not be monitored appropriately, I guess. So what we found is that about a third of the sites currently sampled are inland, so there is somewhat of an imbalance between the work that's being done on the coast versus inland. The second key data gap was in terms of what's being measured at those different sites. There's no consistent list of parameters being measured across all those sites. And the last data gap was right now the focus is on water quality. Understandably, there's not a lot of efforts that we have documented on impacts on aquatic habitats, whether it's local resident species, benthic organisms, or even toxicity effects. The second key accomplishment was help connect all those different agencies, especially those that are monitoring in the same areas, so that their efforts could be more effective and efficient. One of the key accomplishments we've had is already some agencies have identified being sampling and doing testing in exactly the same locations, and so they've either shared the resources in terms of sampling or are expanding the types of analytes that they are measuring. We've also identified some agencies that are now working into sampling areas that they weren't sampling before. And finally, and most importantly for us as scientists, we've also been working with groups that are not routinely monitoring those fire-related compounds and sharing information on how that should be done, what standardized protocols exist, how it should be reported to better contextualize the results once they're presented to you all and the public. Next, please. So the next steps, the map that I've showed you, we developed this as an interactive map so that environmental managers and the public can see where exactly those things are happening. The map is ready to be shared, and we are working with the LA County Department of Public Health so that rather than people going through multiple sites, everything can go through that site. We're working on the water quality page that should be released any day now for people to be able to look at this data more closely. The second step, which we are working through right now, is documenting the different sampling analytical methods that will be instrumental in contextualizing the data that's being generated by those 16 different agencies. And finally, right now, all those initiatives are giving us a good picture at the individual site or maybe watershed, but ultimately, the goal is to be able to summarize the impact at the region, at the county level, and so we will be working with the state, the regional board, to help standardize this data set so that the regional scale impacts can be better summarized and addressed. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, that concludes our report.
That concludes the report. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, first of all, thanks so much for regional board staff for all of the work that has been done. And thank you to SQRP for your partnership in all this and your work of coordination and your report here today. Very much appreciated. I do have a couple of questions, but I'll defer to other board members. Board Member Mendez, anything from you?
Sure, great. Thank you again to staff and support for the amazing work that you're doing in these very difficult times. And I know that you've been inundated with a lot of requests and analyses that you need to put forward. So I had a couple questions regarding the testing. I know you mentioned heavy metals, PCBs, or PFAS as well. I was wondering, and I mentioned this in my briefing yesterday with staff, is there any monitoring from benzene? Because as I mentioned before, during the fires in Sonoma County, Santa Rosa, there was high levels initially of benzene because of the melting of plastic pipes that got into the groundwater and drinking water, and wondering if that's part one of the pollutants being measured, because last I read that more research was needed, but this was something that water agencies were looking into.
Thank you, Board Member Mendez. I'm Jenny Newman, and I know that as many agencies participated in the event. I believe that Heal the Bay sampled for benzene in the water and sand. I can't off the top of my head remember, and I'm wondering if Emily or Elijah, you remember. We sampled for a suite of polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons and don't know if benzene was included. I know that the Division of Drinking Water and other agencies are sampling for that in drinking water. And again, I know that Heal the Bay sampled for it. And if we feel like it needs to be added to the list from the data gap analysis, we will include it.
Okay. Are any of the academics studying for that currently? Are you aware?
I would ask Dr. Mahinto if she knows off. If other agencies.
There's currently one group, yes, that's considering analyzing this after some of the work that we've talked about in the data gaps.
Okay, thank you. And I do, and I mentioned also to staff, I do have a close colleague, Chris Olivares, who's an assistant professor of environmental engineering that also has been testing in the Eaton Altadena fire, particularly around the toxic debris sites, the day labor, where the day laborers are working. So I would love to put you in contact with him. He's award-winning, speaks Spanish, can work closely with some of the worker communities there to get some of those samplings. And he does primarily water and soil sampling.
Thank you. That would be great. Yeah, we didn't have benzene included. Okay. No benzene.
Okay. And if you can maybe forward the reports that I sent you from Santa Rosa, and then it's a Dr. Walton from Purdue that has been one of the leading scientists that did the benzene work in Santa Rosa and Sonoma County.
Yes, we will.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Board Member Camacho.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, I just want to, again, just congratulate staff for doing all this work for, so quickly. I mean, to pull together a contract like this with SCRP in, less than 2 months' time, and it is so essential to have coordination of these sampling sites, or else you get so much, I guess, a potential duplication of efforts, and you really do then utilize all of the efforts in the most efficient way possible. And I think that it just goes to show that the relationships have been built between both the regional board staff and SCRP staff as well. And I think that it's really essential, again, to have those relationships in place and not to start to develop them when the fire occurs or when any disaster occurs. And so, I think this cultivation of relationship has really paid off. One question that I have is, what is the, based on all the monitoring data we have, what do you think the status of beach closures are going to be in the future, or do we know at this point in time?
So the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health is responsible for making decisions about public health and whether or not to close beaches or issue advisories. We simply provide the data. We are currently working with them on consensus about what are the appropriate thresholds to use to compare the data against. But the and so we're providing the data. We're providing the thresholds and the analysis. The decision to whether or not to close or open the beaches remains with the county. I will say that you know, our preliminary analysis of the data indicated levels that were lower than we had feared in the water and in the sediment and the sand. We plan to post a comparison of the data against the various thresholds as soon as we are able and finish with our analysis.
Thank you.
Vice Chair.
I just wanted to say thank you again to staff who worked 12-hour shifts 7 days a week, and to thank both of you for not only your reports but all of the work that you've done in terms of this data collection and managing your team. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And I would echo, of course, many, many thanks again to staff and to all of the other agencies that have been involved. You know, while it's certainly heartening to hear that perhaps the results once analyzed will not be as bad as we had feared, nevertheless, the predictions about climate change that we had heard are becoming reality, and they are as we feared. I always bristle when I hear people say that this is a natural disaster. It's not. It's an anthropogenic, climate-driven caused, if not maybe exacerbated, event, and more is going to happen in the future. Maybe not in this particular guise, but in another one. And so what I would like us to concentrate on, once we've done the monitoring and we have the results and we've moved towards rebuilding and so on, is to look at what lessons we've learned from this and how we're going to react the next time. And I don't mean just the regional board. I mean our entire structure of whether it was 16 agencies or 25 agencies and how they've worked together. And perhaps we've learned something about how to react, how to move forward, how to deal with it the next time we're beset by another devastation that I think is going to be coming our way. So you know, I can't sufficiently express my gratitude as a citizen, as a father. My daughter very narrowly escaped losing her house. We were evacuated. I know so many people whose lives have just been destroyed by this. But there will be another so-called natural disaster around the corner for us. And so how we pull together, you know, as we see efforts at mitigation become eroded every day as our emissions climb globally, we have to learn how to take care of ourselves. So thank you so much for all of your work, and let's think about what we learn from this and how we deal with it in the future. Thanks so much. Okay, next item is public forum. I just want to make sure our board members are okay to continue. Does anybody have any biological pressing needs? Okay, none? All right. See, it's good that we're not provided with water here, and I think that's why staff does that, you know, so that we move through the program more quickly. I'm surprised they've actually... I'm surprised they've actually provided us with chairs that you can sit in, because I think that was another reason. Let's make it as uncomfortable as possible. All right. Okay, we'll move to public forum then. And I have a number of requests for public comment. First, Annalisa Moe from Gilda Bay for 15 minutes. Then Mary Jane Wagle from Women Organizing Resources, Knowledge, and Services, otherwise known as WORKS, for 3 minutes. Then Alina Razi from Biona Wetlands Land Trust for 3 minutes. And then remotely, I have Ray Tahir from TECS Environmental also for 3 minutes. Are there any additional cards for that? Okay, great. Hi, Ms. Moe. Thanks so much. Go ahead. 15 minutes.
Thank you. There we go. Move it a little closer. While we're pulling up the slides, just for the record, Annalisa Moe with Heal the Bay. I just haven't seen you all in a while, so first want to say hello, and thank you for providing, especially today, a bit of a bright spot in a rather chaotic time. So it's great to see you all. Slides up. So following the devastating urban megafires in Los Angeles this winter, Heal the Bay has been trying to understand the impacts, particularly on the Santa Monica Bay. And I do want to set the stage before we dive in with two facts. First, while Heal the Bay is a leading expert on fecal indicator bacteria pollution, we are not wildfire experts. We're rapidly gaining expertise through research, but we are still learning. Second is that Heal the Bay sampled on January 24th and 25th before the first flush rain event on January 26th, and then again tested on January 28th after the rain. Since the data presented today is from late January and since it is now late March, these data do not tell us the current conditions in the Santa Monica Bay, but they do provide valuable insight on the impacts of the Palisade Fire on marine life and potential impacts on human health that we should be keeping an eye on. They also provide a baseline for the immediate impacts of the fire, providing a good comparison to see if conditions are improving. Next slide. So we're doing our best to answer some of the biggest questions that we hear from community members, including what's in the water, is it safe to go swimming or surfing, is it safe to take my family to the beach, and what's being done to remediate the contamination along our coast. Next slide. So we tested at 10 sites throughout Santa Monica Bay. Paradise Cove and Malaga Cove by Rat Beach were intended to serve as control sites. Unfortunately, just before our first sampling day, another small fire did burn just north of Paradise Cove, potentially impacting results. So Malaga Cove has served as our main control site. And within the burn zone, shown here in orange, sites include Los Flores Canyon, Big Rock, Topanga Beach, Will Rogers at Temescal. Additional locations are at Surfrider Beach, just north of the burn zone, and then south of the burn zone at Will Rogers at Santa Monica Canyon, Santa Monica Pier, and Dockweiler State Beach, where we sampled to see effects of ocean currents on the transportation of contaminants. Next slide, please. I do need to thank the fire department and lifeguards of LA for working with us so that we could access the sampling sites safely. This work would not have been possible without their support and collaboration. Next slide. Each sample that we took was collected from the splash zone in need of chest high water, roughly 6 inches below the surface with incoming waves. And we did collect samples for turbidity and fecal indicator bacteria that we could process ourselves. But we also collected samples for PCBs, PAHs, PFAS, benzene, and heavy metals, which we sent to the Physis lab for processing. Next slide, please. And we followed their instructions, including the clean hands, dirty hands protocol for heavy metals and collecting benzene samples with no airspace. Next slide, please. And we did keep everything on ice until the chain of custody was passed to Physis lab. Next slide. So the next step was then determining what to compare the results to. We did attempt to find limits for each of the 116 pollutants that we tested for. Here I'm showing marine and human health limits for pollutants that may be of concern after the Palisades fire, including PCBs, PAHs, and heavy metals. For marine life, we looked at ocean plan, national water quality criteria, as well as action levels that were used to assess water quality following the Lahaina fires in Hawaii. And for human health, we did not consider exceedances of drinking water standards to be an immediate threat, simply a measure to compare to. We instead focused on constituents that do have human health limits in the ocean plan or the national water quality criteria. And even for these, exceedances of the limits do not necessarily cause immediate harm. The risk here is long-term with bioaccumulation in marine organisms and then human consumption of those organisms. Regional board staff recently showed us an EPA tool that allows a risk-based assessment based on frequency and duration of recreational activities, and we're really excited that your staff is doing this risk assessment so that we have established limits to compare results to. In general, it seems like these risk-based recreational limits are much higher than what is of concern for consumption. For example, beryllium may be safe for recreation up to 14.6 micrograms per liter, compared to the limit of 0.033 micrograms per liter for consumption of organisms. And beryllium in particular will come up later in this presentation, so I wanted to highlight that here. Next slide, please. So as mentioned, Heal the Bay tested for 116 pollutants in total, most of which were either not detected or detected at limits below existing health limits, and that is good news. However, a few pollutants, particularly PCBs, PAHs, and some heavy metals, exceeded limits, and these potential contaminants of concern are what I will be presenting on today. And one quick note is that our PFAS and benzene data are unfortunately still pending with the lab, so they may also be of concern, but we'll need to circle back on that. Now, the highest level of pollution observed in the middle of the burn area, particularly at Big Rock, where the remains of burn structures stand directly within the tidal zone. Topanga Beach at the coastal access point of Topanga Creek, which is a large drainage from a burned open space area. And Will Rogers State Beach at Temescal Canyon, another burn zone drainage closer to high-density residential areas. A few contaminants did spike further south at Santa Monica Pier and Dockweiler Beach, indicating potential for some migration of pollution south of the burn zone, though we need a lot more information to determine if those are truly linked to the fires. Also, contamination was limited north of the burn zone at Paradise Cove and at Surfrider Beach, and contamination was very minimal at Malaga Cove at the south end of Santa Monica Bay, offering those control site conditions. Next slide. So in all of our graphs that I will show you, the dark blue is pre-rain data and the light blue is post-rain data. Of the 25 PAHs tested by Heal the Bay, all but three of them were detected at multiple locations. Although PAHs are often associated with burnt vegetated material, they can also originate from fossil fuels. And either way, some PAHs are carcinogenic. Again, the main concern with the limit shown on this graph is bioaccumulation in marine organisms and then human consumption of those organisms. We're eager to see the risk assessment for PAHs to determine safety for recreational activity as well. Next slide, please. Beryllium was not reported in initial data posted on the Regional Board website, and we do recommend including it moving forward since we detected elevated levels in our sampling. Beryllium is carcinogenic, and though initial risk assessment indicates that the levels that we're seeing, which is less than 0.5 micrograms per liter, are not an immediate threat to human health for recreational activity. But the limit on this graph, again, refers to potential long-term risk of bioaccumulation and consumption, so it will be really important to know if concentrations are decreasing over time. Is this a one-time flush, or will contaminants be elevated for months or even longer, and what does that mean for bioaccumulation? Next slide. So one of the questions that we hear a lot is, is it safe to go in the water? And this has been one of the most difficult questions to answer. Laboratory processes take time, as does data analysis. We don't have much on background or baseline levels, and there are very few established human health limits to compare to. We do need to know more about PCBs as well. Our data did show exceedances of human health consumption limits for PCBs at both Will Rogers at Temescal and Dockweiler, but PCBs were not detected anywhere else, so it's a little bit of a question mark there. What we can say right now is that there is potential for long-term human health risks with bioaccumulation and consumption. Risk for water contact recreation is less straightforward. The risk thresholds are being assessed by your staff, and many contaminants do seem to be below what would be immediately harmful to human health. Additionally, Paradise Cove, Surfrider Beach, and Malaga Cove appear to be the least impacted by fire-related contaminants. Again, we're still learning, but this is good news for the immediate human health impacts. Ultimately, risk tolerance is a personal decision, but we hope that this initial assessment will help beachgoers to make a more informed decision until recreational standards can be set. Next slide. Another big question is whether it's safe to visit the beach at all. Physical and possibly chemical hazards have been observed in the fire-impacted area between Las Flores Canyon and Santa Monica State Beach at Montana Avenue. So Heal the Bay recommends avoiding beaches in this area for the time being. However, with some additional precautions like avoiding fire debris and limiting, you know, sand digging activities that might kind of uplift some of those contaminants, I think visiting the beaches south of Santa Monica Beach at Montana Avenue is likely okay. Again, we're still awaiting final sand analysis, particularly for PAHs and PCBs, so we can't be, you know, definitive yet, but we are cautiously optimistic about safety for recreation in both sand and waters. Next slide, please. So I now want to talk about impacts to marine life. For the Palisades Fire, heavy metals are a concern for marine life, and in general, metals concentrations peaked at Big Rock during dry weather, indicating that the burn structures located within the high tide line are likely a major source of heavy metal pollution. Next slide, please. And now we're going to do a little bit of rapid fire with a bunch of graphs here. Beryllium is above maximum marine health levels at multiple locations during both dry and wet weather. Next slide, please. We see the same for lead, and in the next slide, also for chromium. Next slide. Copper primarily spikes at Big Rock and is higher during dry weather when the high tide directly contacts those burnt structures along the coast. And there's actually some dilution with the rain, though metals are still above that maximum limit for marine health. And then there's also an exceedance at Will Rogers at Temescal during wet weather. And in the next slide, we'll see that there's a similar pattern with nickel. In addition, silver, arsenic, and zinc were also detected above average marine health limits, indicating some long-term potential impacts. And there are also elevated levels of aluminum, iron, and manganese, but there are no health limits for these and likely are not as harmful. Next slide, please. We were also joined in the field by Dr. Jenny Jay from UCLA, who did test for nutrients since we did not. And her data are not mine to share here today, but recent data posted on the regional board website indicate high levels of sulfates and phosphorus, which is not surprising given that modern fire suppressants are phosphate-based. It also explains the persistent brown foam that we observed in the field at many beaches, so we definitely encourage continued testing for nutrients. Next slide, please. So the first step of tackling this whole situation is characterizing the contamination to know what we're up against. We definitely thank the regional board and SQIRP for showing leadership in coordinating monitoring efforts throughout Los Angeles. And Heal the Bay is participating in these efforts and will gladly share our data. Debris removal is also underway, and it's critical that this occur safely and quickly, especially for those structures along the coast. Heal the Bay is not leading these efforts, but we are helping to share the information as folks really want to know about cleanup efforts, and we are continuing to focus our own cleanup efforts on removing trash originating from inland areas rather than encouraging folks to interact with that debris. Next slide, please. So just want to wrap up with what do we need to do next? I want to thank regional board staff for reaching out already to discuss monitoring needs moving forward, which includes more sampling in the South Bay, but also sampling in San Pedro Bay for impacts on the Eaton Fire. Testing for beryllium and other contaminants with human health limits in the ocean plan so that we can better understand what the potential long-term impacts for bioaccumulation may be. And also using lower detection levels for PAHs and PCBs so we can better understand those. We're also very excited for the risk-based assessment that will provide recreational human health standards. But it's also important to provide that narrative explanation of impacts to human and marine health, and we believe that agencies like LA County Department of Public Health should be leading these efforts. Finally, all of this work is definitely going to require a lot of collaboration, and Heal the Bay is happy to be a partner in this. Particularly in helping to share information with the public, and folks can visit healthebay.com/ash-to-action to see all of our fire response work and messaging. I have a few seconds left, actually, but I will take any questions that you might have.
You know, thank you so much for all the work that you're doing and to get out there as quickly as possible. And so one thing I wanted to ask you in terms of, you had a slide on debris removal, and you had the Army Corps as well as the LA County Department of Beaches and Harbors. And so can you kind of, do you have the answer of what's the delineation between the scope of the debris removal between Army Corps and between LA County beaches and harbors.
Yeah, so from what I understand, the US EPA was in to do phase one, which is now wrapped up, and Army Corps of Engineers is now initiating phase two, which is cleanup directly of, you know, burn structures, targeting the material that is hazardous but was not addressed in phase one. And beaches and harbors is more addressing the fire debris that is washing up on beaches, particularly outside of the burn zone. They have been collecting some of the large debris, things like wood that have nails sticking out of them. They've also found broken glass washing up, things that, you know, could, again, pose that physical harm, and are currently assessing the smaller, like, black silt that is washing up along the shoreline to determine what we need to do with that. And if there is hazardous material, we'll have to assess, you know, going in and systematically removing that. But if it's not harmful, then it's natural and we want to leave it there. And in fact, removing it could be more harmful to the ecosystem than good. So.
Thank you.
Well, then.
Sure. Thank you for all this work. You provide an important supplemental analysis of when state agencies and local agencies are stretched thin. So thank you for the work that you do, and it's much appreciated. And could you elaborate a little bit more on the benzene report? Do you anticipate how long that would take? And do you any indication that there are exceedances there or harmful levels to human health?
Yeah, really hard to tell at this point. We are continuing to ask the lab for updates, but they have been inundated with sampling requests, mm-hmm. so they are also backed up and overwhelmed, as many agencies are right now. So the latest is that we anticipate to get the last of our results in early April, so hopefully within the next week or two. And, of course, we'll be happy to come back and follow up when we have those results to share.
And are you doing any monitoring more inland as well? I think you might have mentioned, but I might have missed that part.
At this point, we are not. We're focused right now on trying to understand the data that is being collected and continuing to work with SQIRP to, you know, share where data is being collected and sharing our data.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right, great. Thank you. It's nice to see you again. Thank you for all of the work that you and your team are doing. This is really incredible and helpful, and I just took a lot of notes. I have two quick questions, hopefully. The first is, you mentioned that we should be testing for beryllium, and you mentioned a few others, but I didn't hear what those others were.
I didn't have them listed, actually, but in the ocean plan, there's a relatively short list of both carcinogenic and non-carcinogenic chemicals that have human health limits that I believe are all based on bioaccumulation and human consumption. So it might be a good idea to at least at some point take a sample to test for all of those and just make sure that we're within all of those limits.
Okay. And then you mentioned the idea of, you know, is it a one-time flush or is this something that's going to have, you know, bioaccumulation and then long-term health or impacts from the consumption? And you said this is something that could be started to look at or studied. Do you have ideas for how we should be doing that or could be doing that? Or?
Yeah, so luckily there are a number of groups, the 25 that Squirt mentioned, that are helping to collect data. I know that researchers from USC are taking weekly samples at our same burn site locations that we took samples, particularly for things like heavy metals. And so there will be a pretty good data set there that we can compare over time and just see, like, are the concentrations getting lower over time? Are they staying steady? Are they spiking each time that it rains? Just kind of those sorts of trends that will give us a better idea of what the impacts are. Because a lot of the metals that we're seeing are naturally occurring in soils until vegetation is kind of resettled in the Santa Monica Mountains. There will be a spike each time that it rains. But understanding, you know, what is the cumulative effect of those spikes over the year or so that we can expect to see those.
Thank you. And thanks for the work.
Yeah. Thanks so much. Hilda Bay, as always, is doing such important work and contributing so much, and I'm sure that your data will be very helpful in terms of the analysis that the regional board is going through in connection with its own data collection as well. So thank you. Thank you very much, and thanks for your presentation here today.
Great. Thank you so much.
All right. Next is Mary Jane Wagle from Women Organizing Resources, Knowledge, and Services Works for 3 minutes, please.
Thank you all for your time. I didn't realize this was a volunteer job, and you were clearly a gift to all of us to take your time to do this. I'm Mary Jane Wagle. I'm the CEO of Works, an affordable housing nonprofit. I'm here today to alert you to a matter that affects a proposed affordable housing development in Los Angeles. The project is a 48-unit large family development on 0.45 acres that will house youth, developmentally disabled persons, and low-income families. The council district in this area strongly supports the project. After 9 years in development, the project recently received the final funding it needs and faces a deadline to start construction. Since October, we've been working with the Water Board staff to approve the soil management plan for the project as required under NEPA rules because we're using federal funds for financing. On Friday, we received that approval, and we really appreciate the Water Board staff's collaboration in helping us to meet our tight timeline. Despite this approval, we'll be meeting with staff next week to discuss additional requirements they are proposing for soil and groundwater remediation. As part of our own due diligence, we had conducted phase one, several phase two studies, and a subsurface investigation, and determined that we needed a soil management plan during excavation and a vapor mitigation system for the building to fully protect future residents. At the request of the Water Board, we conducted extensive further testing of the soil and the soil vapor, as well as of the groundwater at over 50 feet below the site. The net findings have shown high levels of VOCs in the soil vapor in various areas and chemicals in the groundwater. Several environmental scientists have concluded that the source of the contamination is off-site. This is consistent with the historical use of this property as either residential or a parking lot, and is consistent with relatively few detections of any chemicals in the soil all the way down to the groundwater, with even those detections an order of magnitude below screening levels. Despite this, in comments to our subsurface evaluation, staff is suggesting that we would need to remediate and clean the soil, soil vapor, and groundwater. That would effectively kill this important project. Understanding the Water Board's concerns about achieving clean water and soil, we would suggest that they look to the potential sources of the contamination, such as a gas station, formerly a dry cleaners, located a block away. The health and safety of future residents on this site, which is very important to us, can be fully protected with a strong vapor intrusion management system. Our building design will include a vapor barrier underneath the subterranean parking garage and a venting system to convey any vapors to above the roof line, a strategy which has been shown to be effective in comparable situations. Our consultants have determined that this design will bring risk levels well below Water Board requirements. Yeah. I just have a couple more sentences. Is that okay?
A couple more sentences, please. Thank you. Wrap up. Thank you.
We're meeting with staff on April 2nd to discuss their concerns and wanted you to be aware of the context. Imposing soil and groundwater remediation requirements would place an impossible burden on this project, and we would unfortunately have to abandon an affordable housing project that is a high priority for us, for the city of Los Angeles, and for the state. We very much hope we can come to an agreement with staff about appropriate steps and move forward with this important project. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Let me first apologize for mispronouncing your last name when I introduced you.
No, so. Everybody else does too. Don't worry.
Well, no, I do. So I apologize for that. Do we have a staff response to Ms. Wagler's?
Okay. Yes, we do. Acting AEO Russ.
Hi, Russ Colby, Acting Assistant Executive Officer. I appreciate you coming today and talking about this important project, and we recognize it is an important project, and as Ms. Wegle noted, we received the request in October and issued the approval just last week, so that is unheard of in our world. And we do have concerns about the site, and that's why we're meeting next week with them to discuss their concerns and our concerns and hopefully bring this to a successful resolution.
All right. Any other board questions? Well, Ms. Ragley, thank you very much for coming and bringing this to our attention. Thank you. The next speaker is Adina Razi from Bayona Wetlands Lands Trust. For 3 minutes, please.
Okay.
There you go.
Yes. Good morning, board members. My name is Alina Razi. I am an environmental science student from UCLA and an intern at the Bayona Wetlands Land Trust. I'm speaking today with deep concern about the proposal to delete the topics of climate change and environmental justice from the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission's work plan. One of your board members and one of your staff members will be voting as members of the commission on whether or not to approve this work plan on April 17th. And I urge your representatives on the commission to reaffirm the commission's commitment to climate action and environmental justice as we need it now more than ever. You should not vote to remove these important topics, which are priorities in the commission's strategic plan. The draft's apparent reduction in focus on climate change is concerning, given how it impacts our waterways through rising temperatures, changing precipitation patterns, and sea level rise. Similarly, environmental justice principles ensure equitable protection for all communities, particularly those disproportionately affected by water quality issues. A separate topic, I'd also like to note that the Bayona Wetlands are classified as a Category 4A impaired water body, and therefore is supposed to have an implementation schedule with a specified reasonable timeline for attaining the applicable water quality standards. The wetlands serve a major ecological purpose, yet have remained largely neglected for two decades. Please consider establishing a clear implementation schedule so that you as a regulatory agency and the general public can all have a clear understanding of the timeline. Thank you all for your time, efforts, and dedication to this work.
Thank you. Is there a staff response at this time, or?
Hi, Chair. Jenny Newman. I will not respond regarding the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission recommendation since it's out of the purview of this board, but we note the comment for the record. Regarding the request for an implementation plan for the Bayona Wetlands and Invasive Species TMDL, staff has previously responded to this request in writing to the Bayona Wetlands Land Trust, stating our belief that an implementation is not a plan is not necessary, that implementation actions and a plan are underway to implement that TMDL, that there have been delays in the implementation of that TMDL due to CEQA requirements and recent litigation and the need to revise the EIR for that restoration project. We do not feel that the Water Board adopting an implementation plan would speed up that process anymore. We feel like California Fish and Wildlife, who are responsible for the wetlands and leading the restoration plan effort, have been aggressively pursuing funding to fund the planning work necessary for the restoration and have been moving forward in good faith to implement the restoration plan. And we don't feel like the board adopting an implementation plan would make things happen any faster. Instead, staff are continuing to work with Fish and Wildlife on trying to help them secure funding. And we have some good progress we're making in that respect to help them complete their environmental impact report revision. So I'm hoping we'll have some good news to share on that in the future. But in the meantime, staff recommends we just continue pursuing helping Fish and Wildlife with funding and not needing to adopt an implementation plan.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Any questions from board members?
No.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Razi. Next, I have a card from Mr. Mike Dunn for 3 minutes, representing Redondo Village Shopping Center. 3 minutes, please.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'll do that again. That's much better. Good morning. My name is Mike Dunn. I am here on behalf of Redondo Village Shopping Center. The property is a 53,000 square foot local shopping center. We are a family controlled ownership that has been badly impacted by the Water Board's delay in determining the source of environmental contamination. Our shopping center is between a medical facility that uses VOCs and a former landfill. We were given a work order to conduct, actually, if we can go to the next slide, that would probably be better. It gives an overview of the property. We were given a work order to conduct tests in August 2020 based on suspicions from our medical neighbor and a former tenant, or that a former tenant at the shopping center contaminated the area. We have spent money and time complying with this work order with no resolution of an issue the Water Board brought to our attention. In multiple rounds of underground assessment work, we have spent approximately $350,000 for our consultants to tell us that our site is not the source of the contamination. Meanwhile, we have approximately 90 mostly elderly people, some who have lost homes in the fires, some disabled, and most retired, living off the cash flow of the center. That cash flow has been held up pending the Water Board disposition of the environmental consultant's findings. Our operations, financing, leasing, even sale of the property are all frozen and have been since this work order started. We have also retained specialized lawyers to help, but nothing seems to break the Water Board's logjam. We made a written request last summer for staff to redirect their pursuit to the cause of the contamination, and we have not yet had a meaningful reply. We appreciate staff's impact by pandemics and natural disasters, but we are here today to request that you please get us out of this years-long limbo and conclusively determine that the site to the east of our property is responsible for the problem. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for coming and making your presentation. Do we have a staff response, please, Russ?
Yes, hi. Russ Colby again. Thank you, Mr. Dunn, for coming and speaking today. We are aware of this site. I want to note that the contaminant of concern here is PCE. There was a dry cleaner that operated on the property for approximately 30 years, and PCE is a contaminant that's typically associated with dry cleaners. Recognizing the limitations that that Mr. Dunn and family have had, we recommended a phased approach for assessment, soil and soil vapor. There still needs to be some groundwater assessment done, and we are looking at other sources off-site. We've already begun that investigation and gotten the necessary data from landfill monitoring and as well as the neighboring medical facility. So we are in the middle of conducting those investigations, and we'll reach out to Mr. Dunn, et cetera, for further investigation.
Okay. Thank you. Any board member comments or questions about this? And Mr. Dunn, thank you very much for coming and speaking to us. And I think Mr. Colby has heard you and will be in touch. I think maybe if there was a dry cleaner on site, and dry cleaners, unfortunately, are a cause for concern, but hopefully that can be sorted out and so that the center and its financial situation can be returned to full health. Thanks you for coming.
We appreciate that. Just for the record, our neighbor, the medical facility, has PCE in their soil, and in a much more significant way than our property does. So the facts seem to indicate, as I mentioned, off-site source of contamination, whether it's the hospital or the landfill or another source. So appreciate your attention to this matter. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you for taking the time to come. All right, next speaker is Ray Tahir from TCS Environmental for 3 minutes, and I think this is by remote. Is Mr. Tahir with us?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Good morning, board members. There are some things that I'd like to call to your attention after your long hiatus. First, if you haven't heard, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in City and County of San Francisco versus USEPA that MS4 NPDES permittees and other NPDES permittees are not required to, one, comply with the water quality standards or objectives in receiving waters, but only at outfalls instead. And two, that strict compliance with numeric water quality standards and objectives and WQ bells or other numeric criteria are not required, but instead may comply through the implementation of BMPs, which has been the case for other water boards regarding general industrial activity permits. See the 4th District Court of Appeals in Divers Environmental Conservation Organization versus the State Water Resources Control Board. This is something that I had brought to this board's attention on multiple occasions without resulting in any action from it to eliminate receiving water compliance and monitoring and strict compliance at outfalls. The certification provided, the verification provided by the U.S. Supreme Court should spur this board into reopening the MS4 permit to comply with this decision. And just as a reminder, as I have on multiple occasions, the current MS4 permit is invalid because it was never properly adopted. Next, the LA Times reported on sea lion deaths caused by algae blooms that give off domoic acid. The algae blooms are the result of excessive nutrients. I pointed this problem out in 2023, but of course the board did nothing. What should have happened is that the iterative process should have been triggered to review the BMPs that address nutrients and revise them accordingly. Third, and this is really important, despite the fact that the Palisades and Altadena Eaton wildfires occurred on January 7th, the board did not meet in January and February, thereby preventing it from addressing their impact on water quality. Nor does the agenda for this meeting include a specific reference to wildfires. I notice also that a lot of attention has been given to the Palisades and the coastal communities, particularly in terms of the impact on beach water quality. However, very little attention, it seems, has been given to Altadena. Altadena has a sizable African-American and Latino population. To my knowledge, there hasn't been a significant monitoring that has gone on because the monitoring would be necessary to determine the impact of the fires and the pollutants that resulted from it on groundwater quality. Most of Altadena and parts of Pasadena in the Hastings Ranch area and Sierra Madre, they all drain to Rio Hondo spreading grounds, okay, one way or another. Well, monitoring should have been done to determine if there is any significant concentrations of metals and things like asbestos, which hadn't been tested for.
Mr. Tahir, could you wrap up, please?
Yeah, I should also point out, sir, that there are a number of debris basins in Altadena, and I don't believe this board has done any water quality testing there. And I would like you at the next meeting to set aside an agenda item that specifically addresses the wildfires, if you don't mind.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for your presentation. Do we have any staff reaction?
But again, you need to address Altadena, okay? Because I think there's an environmental justice issue here.
All right, thank you. Do you have a staff response?
Sure. This is Jenny Newman again. I'll respond specifically to the questions about water quality monitoring in the Eaton Fire area. There is and has been water quality monitoring in the Eaton Fire area. As Dr. Mahinta pointed out, there has a lot more monitoring in the Santa Monica Bay and along the coast, but there is also significant monitoring in the Eaton Fire area. And one of the reasons that we were working with SCWRP to coordinate the monitoring is to identify data gaps and we are looking at all of the collective efforts to see if there are any data gaps, and so far we've identified a couple in the Eaton Fire area that we plan to fill. And so in addition to that coordinated effort to identify gaps and fill them, the Water Board, through our regulatory authority, reached out to all the MS4 permittees before the rains that occurred immediately after the fire to make sure that they were all doing their MS4 required outfall and receiving water monitoring, and they were ready and they did execute that monitoring. So we will be happy to present the results of all that data to the board once it's available. Because it's MS4 compliance data, it's submitted at a less frequent than our own in-house data that we collected from the ocean water. But we'll present that to the board as soon as it's ready.
Thank you for that response. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the response. And it's some of those issues that we talked about during our briefing yesterday about additional monitoring in the Eaton Fire area, and specifically coordinating with the Army Corps of Engineers, their debris site near Duarte. So hopefully that's a part of that endeavor as well. So,
thank you. We'll do that.
Any other board? I just wanted to add that for us as a board, the victims of the Eaton Fire, this is top of mind for us, as of course are the victims of Palisades, and any kind of suggestion that there is more attention being paid to one area than the other is just we completely reject that. So. Thank you. I think that is the end of our public comment period. I have no other cards. And with that, shall we take maybe a 3 or 4 minute break, and then we'll come back for the presentation. So what time is it, Sabrina?
It's 11:08.
It's 11:08. We come back at 11:15. Okay, the next item of business is agenda number 9, which is our consideration of tentative resolution approving proposed special study for Los Angeles County Sanitation District's AK Warren Water Resource Facility. So, Mr. Webb.
Up. All right. Hi, Stephen Webb. I'm the supervisor of the Municipal Permitting Unit. And I'll just start off with introducing the speaker. The AK Warren Water Resource Facility, or the Warren Facility, previously known as the Joint Water Pollution Control Plant, is owned and operated by the Los Angeles County Sanitation Districts, or LACSD, and is permitted to discharge up to 400 million gallons per day of secondary treated effluent to the Pacific Ocean off the Palo Verde Peninsula. This discharge is regulated under MPDS Order R4-2023-0181, adopted by the Los Angeles Water Board on May 23, 2023. The MPDS permit contains a requirement for the discharger to consult with the Los Angeles Water Board annually to determine the need for special studies. On December 11, 2024, representatives from LACSD met with Los Angeles Water Board staff to discuss the upcoming special study involving the use of chemical scans to characterize non-toxic effluent samples and to create chemical fingerprints for LACSD's different wastewater treatment plants. The Los Angeles Water Board staff has reviewed LACSD's proposal and is particularly interested in the prospect of using these unique chemical fingerprints to help inform future toxicity investigations. Since this special study may help identify the cause of toxicity when present in the effluent, Los Angeles Water Board staff recommend the board adopt this special study resolution as proposed. A representative from LACSD is here today to summarize the objectives of the study and to summarize the results from similar studies conducted by LACSD in the past. Josh Westfall is a senior environmental scientist at LACSD and will now provide you with a brief presentation summarizing the study. Thank you.
Good morning. Good morning. Chair Nahai, board members, thank you for this opportunity. Again, my name is Josh Westfall with the Los Angeles County Sanitation Districts. The idea here is that we'll run through a little bit of background about who we are, most of you know, what we've done in the past, and what we're proposing to do here in the future, and what we think are the benefits associated. Next slide, please. The Los Angeles County Sanitation District service area, as you can see on this slide, covers a pretty broad geographic area in Los Angeles County. If you focus on the lowest portion of it, that large green area, that's the joint outfall system. All of those facilities and sewers are connected to our Warren facility in Carson, which is our coastal discharge. We are a consortium of 24 special assessment districts. We have only one staff. We collect, treat, and recycle sewage from approximately 5.5 million people. Next slide, please. In terms of the background information, each of our NPDES permits require chronic toxicity testing from water reclamation plant effluent. These toxicity tests can take up to 8 days for the actual test to be conducted, and then they can take additional days for the data analysis, making sure that the quality analysis, quality control is proper, and then we can actually do something with the results. When toxicity is observed, such toxicity might be transient in nature, such as we're not going to see, you know, a similar effect every single time that we run a sample. And there are a lot of other challenges associated, which might make it difficult or challenging to determine what the exact cause of the toxicity is or was. In addition, chemicals, we'll call them chemicals, but they might be things that we use every day, like, you know, table salt, that's one. But we'll just talk about something, you know, like your typical copper. Different chemicals might have different toxic responses in different facilities' waters just because of the composition of them. Next slide, please. In an effort to quantify this, we took semi-quantitative scans of, we took a year at different facilities and saw if we could create a what we would call a fingerprint of each of these non-toxic sets. We looked at a year's worth of data because that included a minimum of 36 samples for each facility. We wanted to look at, you know, are there things such as seasonal trends associated? And again, we're only looking at the non-toxic because we wanted to establish a nice baseline for what these samples should look like. The analyses that we did, we had a semi-quantitative, what we call a metal scan, and then a current use pesticide scan. When we composited all of those, you know, all of those data points together, we found that there were relatively unique fingerprints to each of the facilities under your typical non-toxic circumstances. So you might have the effluent from Long Beach looks different than your effluent does in Whittier. Even under non-toxic circumstances, chemically using these scans, you can differentiate between them. Next slide, please. Now, what that demonstrated to us is that we really did need to come up with a site-specific baseline for each facility we might wish to monitor so that we know what's the normal background for that facility. This proposed special study is going to piggyback off of the two studies that we've done previously where we've developed these baseline fingerprints for five water reclamation plants. Those were the 2019-20 and 21-22 special studies. This proposed study would conduct the chemical scans to establish these fingerprints for the non-toxic samples across a year for the remaining three water reclamation plants in our system, which have toxicity standards. You can see the sample breakdown there. It's a minimum of three samples per facility. That's because most of the toxicity tests that are used are actually three sample tests. We're required to do one test per month at minimum. So we would be looking at all of those data across a year, compositing them, compositing the data to see if we can, one, come up with that additional fingerprint for each of the facilities, continue to demonstrate that the facilities have their own unique fingerprints, and compare all of those. Next slide, please. In terms of the benefits of this study, the biggest one is that it can assist in the identification of potential toxicants in samples. Our goal, if we do see toxicity in samples, is to figure out what might be causing it and stop that from happening, you know, in this current event or in future events. And we believe that this chemical scan approach has the potential to speed up, both in terms of actual speed and in terms of efficiency, the process. And at minimum, it's going to provide an additional complementary line of evidence for what we typically do is the toxicity reduction evaluation, where we're going to do an identification of, you know, manipulating the water samples, exposing them to the organisms again. These processes take weeks, whereas we could be looking at data in a matter of days from these chemical scans. It can get us to the same endpoint quicker, and again, if nothing else, it's going to provide an additional line of evidence. And that's where we go into the putting it into practice, that we did have one instance where one of our facilities in Whittier, our San Jose Creek facility, we had some acute toxicity observed, and we immediately started to take action. This included, since we already had a baseline running these chemical scans on the toxic samples, we immediately identified zinc as looking, the concentration of zinc in these samples looking nothing like what it's ever looked like before. And sure enough, we also had a few weeks later the toxicity results from our manipulated samples come back, which suggested that it was indeed a metal that was causing the toxicity. We were able to put that information into action immediately with the cooperation of our industrial waste group, who identified every potential discharger of zinc in the sewer shed, paid a site visit to everybody, and that led to a potential discharger of zinc voluntarily capping their discharge point, and the problem was eliminated. And so what we see for this moving forward is it immediately a complementary approach, and who knows, maybe down the road it could be if technology continues to advance, it could be a replacement approach for the traditional biological methods in terms of identifying what's going on. And that's what we have. So if anybody has any questions, I'm happy to field them.
Great. Thank you very much. Do we have any board member questions this time? Do we have any staff comments? Or does Mr. Webb has nothing additional? Okay. Ms. Newman?
No, I just want to reiterate that staff recommends the board adopt the resolution.
Thank you. I don't have any questions, and so I can call for the vote. Do we have a motion for approval?
Move approve.
All right. A move by board member Camacho. I think about to be seconded by Vice Chair Ashian. Okay, could we have a roll call vote, please, Helen?
Vice Chair Ashian?
Yes.
Board Member Camacho?
Yes.
Board Member Mendez?
Yes.
Chair Nahai?
Yes.
Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes that item. And now we can adjourn into closed session. Ms. Nunez, would you like to tell us what we need to do?
We're going to adjourn to closed session to discuss items 10B and 10O, also items 10F and 10P. And 10G, and these are related to City of Torrance and the Sky Park commercial site, as well as the Virgin Scent and Liberty day-to-day matter, and finally the Boeing litigation.
Will we then need to come back to reopen the meeting, or?
No, we don't intend to reopen the public portion of the meeting, so we'll adjourn after closed session.
Okay, great. So then we are adjourned. Thank you very much.